Somebody whose work is transcendent is Joseph Heller, the author of Catch-22. If somebody right after World War II had written a book, a nonfiction book, pointing out the ambiguities in that good war, pointing out the bad things done by the supposed good guys in that good war, if somebody had written a book suggesting that the good war of World War II and the greatest generation were not necessarily the greatest, and this was not necessarily good, that it was much more complicated than that, because war corrupts everybody who engages in it. Even if you start off being the good guys and they're the bad guys, soon you begin to look like the bad guys, because that's what war does to everybody. Somebody had written a nonfiction book like this would have been very difficult in that glow that accompanied World War II. But you could write a novel like Catch-22, and slyly, an artist can be sly, and slyly point to things that take you outside the traditional thinking. And you can get away with it in fiction if people say, oh, well, it's fiction. But remember what Picasso said, art is a lie that tells the truth. Think about that. Art is a lie that tells the truth, meaning...
And next up on Free Radio, it's Bathrop Spears' Broadsides. A little bit late, sorry to interrupt that. Somebody put on the... well, we're not coordinated too well tape-wise, but hey, hopefully you'll be able to hear the conclusion of that talk sometime in the distant future. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norris, and up for discussion today, shortly after the musical introduction, will be the Unruly Assembly Law. So everyone sit down and be ruly. Be ruled.
We've been the pride of Romania since 1201. Passed on for generations, father to son. Descended from gypsies, as proud as we can be. Don't risk my curse, it could be worse. Embrace your family tree. Join the family business, learn the family trade. Make yourself a monster, make the world afraid. Join the family business, you must take the family name. Follow in our footsteps and you'll win eternal fame. The Roqueforts are celebrated for their Roquefort cheese. The Rothschilds are famous for their wines. Hershey's have their chocolates and Lipton's have their teas. When it comes to making monsters, you can't beat the Frankensteins. Join the family business, rob a grave or two. Stop the shop from closing, it all depends on you. Uphold the family honor, you must toe the family line. Join the family business, join the family business. Join the family business, for your name is Frankenstein. Meet your family! Your great-great-great-grandfather Mordecai.
Join the family business, boy, if you don't wanna die.
As you know, predestination from the day of your creation has determined your vocation. That's a fact.
Because you are a Frankenstein,
you have no choice,
you can't decline.
Show some spine.
It's time to sign the family pact. This is your fate. Become a Frankenstein before it's too late. We know you won't regret it. You should express your will. Reassess, you're under stress.
Just relax and make a serum. Come up with a brilliant theorem. Take your knife, create a life.
It ain't no fun.
surprise. Best be prudent, best be wise. Time to open up your eyes. Join the family business.
Join the family enterprise. Best be prudent, best be wise. Time to open up your eyes. Join the family business. Join the family enterprise. Best be prudent, best be wise. Time to open up your eyes. Come on, come clean, don't make a scene. Your name's a pocket scene. Join the family business. Learn the family trade. Make yourself a monster.
And that, of course, was Mel Brooks' latest musical based on the movie of the same name, Young Frankenstein, or Frankenstein, as he's sometimes known. Great movie, and you'll never be able to see this musical because it only plays in New York. Therefore, I will inflict it on you throughout the show periodically as part of my remedial training program for those of you who wish to learn musicals. Those of you who don't, well... Anyway, in the studio with me, we have two activists who are fighting to change a law that has been in force since 2005 in Santa Cruz, the Unruly Assemblies Ordinance. We have Brian English. Hello, Brian.
Hello there.
Let me turn up your mic so people can hear you.
Hello there.
There you go. And also that man about ordinances, Jesse Wilson.
Thanks for having us, Robert.
Hey, thanks for coming. You two are part of various organizations, little-known organizations, which I just heard about from reading Shanna Banana McCord's Sentinel article, that she's the Sentinel writer who... Well, she actually got some interesting information into your articles. Usually it's a PR piece for the police department. And she got it wrong, of course. She somehow thought you were going to be given an easy ride on the ordinance that you reformed since you had Coonerty and Rotkin backing your ordinance, Coonerty being the mayor and Rotkin being the real mayor. So, well, what can you say? So, go ahead.
If I could say it real quick, I mean, there's Coonerty and Rotkin, but if you knew some of the other people in the city council, and from our perspective, we knew we were up against a lot. So, you know, I definitely think she was misled.
Well, she's been around the council for about 3 or 4 years, at least 2 or 3 years now, maybe 1 or 2 years, but certainly 2 years. And she's... her writing is irredeemably superficial all the time, and she—I mean,
we got that.
But the problem, of course, that she had is that you know Coonerty is the mayor, and controls the agenda, and as I've talked about on the station, has cut back public comment on half the substantive items of the agenda to essentially 2 minutes for people he doesn't like, as a total chunk of time for anywhere from 6 to 15, 20, 30 items, which are on the consent agenda. You get a total of 2 minutes to talk about all those items, all put together, so better talk fast. So Coonerty is a powerful figure and has amassed more power to himself. Rotkin, of course, has been around forever, and he kind of gives Coonerty his cues. You'll see Coonerty. It wasn't Coonerty who said 2 minutes for every speaker. It was Rotkin who said 2 minutes for every speaker. If you remember watching on Tuesday, you were in the audience on Tuesday night. I just watched it from the television. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, it wasn't an unreasonable expectation to expect that two powerful figures supporting a reform in the law might expect to get it. And of course, what you got was the main purpose of the law. There were four different aspects to this law. Well, let's begin at the beginning. In 2005, there was an ordinance in place before the Unruly Assemblies Bill was passed that involved unreasonable noise. Mm-hmm. And that said that if you engage in unreasonable noise at any time, that's criminal violation and punishable by a fine and or, I guess, a fine. Maybe a couple or two or three times, perhaps it's a misdemeanor, but it's used downtown to scare away musicians. Then there's also a noise curfew. So after 10 o'clock at night, there is a more stringent standard for noise. Mm-hmm. But apparently this was not enough for individuals who were concerned about unruly partying, as they put it, on the West Side. And I really wish we had somebody here from that point of view, because we need to have that. So for the purposes of this discussion, I am going to be the Ed Porter of the situation. I will be Cynthia Matthews, and I will make sure that you two stay in line.
Sure. Now, real quick, I don't think that these people had completely invalid concerns. I mean, we do believe that if someone's trying to go to work the next day and it's just extremely too loud, or they experience a bunch of broken bottles in their lawn, or people peeing on the lawn, you know, that's one thing. But this ordinance affects a lot of us who have the more safe and responsible a party. So I want to separate these things into we're not just against these people, you know, going to work and stuff like that and having a good life. We just feel like we're being persecuted for, you know, just having fun with nobody hurt and no problems.
And let me just say also, for those who want to call in and make comments on the whole situation, there is a phone number to call in, and we give priority to callers, although I sometimes am abrupt in my cutoffs, and I'll try to be less abrupt, but what can you do when you have an autocratic talk show host like myself? 427-3772 is the phone number to call, 427-3772. And that's, you can make your comments on the situation. You also might want to consider going to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. That's Santa Cruz Indie Media, indyBay.org/Santa Cruz. There you will find at least two articles which I've written, and there's some negative comments by critics who don't like my articles. One of them is called Party Poopers on Parade. Council defeats, actually it's defears, but it should be defeats, unruly assembly reform, and it announces this show. And then there is another one that it talks about the issue called Unruly Party Ordinance Coming Up for Amendment Tuesday at City Council. And so you can read a bit about it there. And there's a lot of stuff on the earlier ordinance. If you go onto the Indie Bay, the earlier Santa Cruz Indie Media website, you can read a lot about the Unruly Assembly Ordinance. Again, the number to call is 427-3772. In the studio with me are Brian and Jesse. Jesse, what organization are you? Did you form about this whole situation?
I founded Students for a Sensible Party Ordinance, which mostly consists of UCSC students, but like Brian and I are working professionals in the community, we also have a lot of people who enjoy gathering and hosting parties, which we think are illegal and totally fair and just. And most of the time, nobody complains, but when they do, you know, sometimes we're treated unfairly, so we wanted to bring that up tonight.
How long has this group been in existence, Students for Sensible Partying? What is it?
Students for a Sensible Party Ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
We founded it right when the party ordinance passed.
Summer 2005.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So at this point, we have 1,600 members in our organization.
Paying members?
They're not paying dues, but I have contact information for every single member. So
wow.
We form what should be a pretty powerful lobbying group.
How many of them showed up at City Council on Tuesday?
About 50 compared to 10 of our opponents. So you'd think that we would have some clout at the City Council meeting.
You're too young.
Yeah, unfortunately that wasn't
well,
the case.
You know, every 45-year-old housewife is worth at least 10 students.
That's for sure. And particularly 60-year-old talk shows are at least 100 students.
Wow.
But we won't get into that. I don't wish to be ageist in this situation. So is there a website where people can go for Students for a Sensible Party Ordinance, or how do they get in touch with you?
It was at scpartyordinance.org, but unfortunately I got overrun with spam and web bots, so I've just been continuing my Facebook group, and it's a global group. Anybody can search for Santa Cruz Party Ordinance, and we'll be on top there. So I'm the founder. We have some other administrators who are experienced party hosts. They've experienced dealing with police officers and talking to city council members, and we're definitely well informed of the situation.
Jess, why don't you offer your email so if anyone wants to contact you, maybe help you out, or you can help them?
Sure. JesseWilsonBusiness@gmail.com. JESSE is Jesse. JesseWilsonBusiness@gmail.com.
So it's taken – this is something I noticed. You had a number of student speakers who did come up and spoke for the 2 minutes before they were all kind of hustled along, which I found interesting because this item was the only item on the evening agenda. And I think they adjourned around 9:30 or 9:45. It could have easily allowed people to speak for 3 minutes, which would have added maybe another 40 minutes, 30 minutes to the proceedings. But since it was the only item on the agenda, it seemed to me particularly callous to the public to do this, or let's just say maybe it was more realistic, because I don't think the city council, even when they listen to you for 3 minutes, pays much attention to what you have to say. So maybe they were just saying, hey, let's get cut to the chase. We don't give a shit what you're saying, so let's just get it over with, shall we?
They had their minds made up. I would agree with that.
Well, there are certain members that certainly did. Some of the others seemed a little bit more open-minded. I was actually impressed with Mike Rotkin sticking to his guns with voting for Amendment 1, which was lowering the fines, where Coonerty backed down there. So, you know, he was initially for lowering the fines, and then after hearing all the upset, you know, people coming in, which was maybe 10 compared to our 50, he backed down. I think it was a political move of him backing down, less than a practical move.
Let's clarify again what we're talking about. This I mentioned the two ordinances, which are still on the books, about unreasonable noises both before and after 10 o'clock.
Can I give some background about that real quick?
In 2005, there was the unruly assemblies ordinance. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Well, the two ordinances in place that you're talking about are unreasonable noise, and the second one is sound amplification, and of course there's noise after curfew or whatever that
noise
is.
Noise curfew, yeah.
Yeah, so those are three ordinances that were already used by the Santa Cruz Police Department when busting parties. And among those, I've received probably 5 total tickets among those three.
Over what period of time?
Since 2003 to 2006.
Prior to the unruly ordinance?
Mostly prior.
Okay.
Well, we did get a party ordinance.
Yeah, we also got the party ordinance ticket, but first I want to talk about the others. Those fines were normally around $400, and normally the judge stuck us with the highest fine possible, the maximum penalty. So we were already looking at $400 a party, and no warning was required. Anytime a cop shows up to a party and says this is out of control, or this is too loud, or, you know, one neighbor called, so here's your violation, it's going to be $400. In one night, I actually managed to receive $800 worth of fines, and this is before the party ordinance passed. So for neighbors to say that, you know, the police had their hands tied, there was nothing they could do, I would totally disagree with that.
Of course, the devil's advocate would say, well, this is because you guys are running loud and unruly parties, and shows the need for another ordinance, because you keep on going, you keep on throwing these parties, you get the fines, we need a higher fine. What do you say to that?
I say $800 per party is a pretty big deterrent in itself.
Did it deter you from throwing parties?
Absolutely. We cut down to one party every 6 months, which I didn't think was unreasonable.
What was your party? Well, I don't think one party every night is unreasonable, provided the party is not too loud.
Sure.
The question to me is, you know, both for you who received these citations and for the community generally, what? And this is the problem I had with the whole process. There didn't seem to me to be a lot of clear stats around how many people were complaining about parties, how many parties were actually being given citations prior to 2005 when the ordinance passed, and in the interval between 2005 and 2008 when the ordinance amendments were considered on Tuesday night. So we don't have any real sense of what impact the ordinance had in terms of did it reduce the number of parties, because that was my concern. I was concerned that the ordinance is really kind of fear-mongering. It makes people afraid to party. It doesn't make them afraid to party unreasonably. It just makes them afraid to party at all. And I don't think that issue was ever really addressed at the city council in either. Maybe it was addressed in 2005. I don't remember then. But I listened to the entire debate, and I don't recall anybody really either raising that. I think some students did, perhaps. But it wasn't really answered.
Well, you had a couple, I don't know, maybe 5 parents come up and just say, wow, I can finally sleep, and this is so great, and it's been a huge difference. And that small sample size to them represented progress. So I believe you're correct that there was no actual empirical study, you know, with a fair sample size of before and after to really clarify that issue that you brought up.
And the real issue to me, again, as I said, is not just how many people were disturbed, which is important. I mean, I want to be able to sleep.
We agree.
You know, I think everybody agrees that, at least in principle, they agree. Whether they agree in practice is hard to say. But the real issue is, that's one of the real issues. Another real issue is, what's the impact on reasonable parties? Does this cut down a lot on people's ability or willingness to risk throwing a party at all? And that wasn't surveyed either by you or by the other side or by the police.
Actually, I tried. I was unfortunately disallowed from getting that information from the Santa Cruz Police Department without paying a fee for a record search and waiting 10 business days for those results to come through. The city council does have access to those figures, but they didn't want to share them with me last time I tried. So in my experience, going to the lots of parties, hosting parties, you know, being very involved in the scene.
What figures were you looking for? Remind me what specifically.
I was looking for the figures of how many people were getting charged for each violation before the ordinance passed and how many since the ordinance passed, so I could determine whether more people were being fined now or before the ordinance, how many calls were placed now as compared to before the ordinance, and whether the police department would agree that this made a real effect.
And also how much the police department was, in terms of services, how much the police department was costing the community to do this, how much money was coming in.
Yeah, I want to jump real...
These are other issues that are important.
Yeah, real quick on the cost of the police department, to me is actually a very big issue. You know, sometimes we're having a party, and, you know, there's people there, but all it takes is one police officer to show up to most parties and, you know, either say they're getting a warning or we got a problem here and you need to solve it, there's going to be fines or what have you. And it scares every party to death. But what happens is they send minimum of two officers to these. And we actually had a party where six officers showed up. And there was no reason that many officers needed to
come. How many people were at the party?
I would say at least 100.
And were there any citations issued other than for the unruly assembly? And was a citation issued for unruly assembly?
Well, they told us we were getting a warning.
Okay, were the citations issued anything else like minor in possession of alcohol or public
Not to my knowledge.
No.
And would you know about that? Could it be the citations were issued that you didn't know about?
That's possible, yeah.
Is it likely?
I don't think so. I was out front most of the time, and I was talking to the police officers, and they made threats like that we were breaking the law in all these different ways, which, you know, I didn't really agree with, but I normally don't talk back. I just kind of sit back and and try not to...
You know, it wasn't like there was a parade of people in the middle of the street yelling and screaming.
We're pretty organized.
Gang members, and, you know... You didn't need six cops out there, and it's just really a waste of taxpayer money.
The six cops deal, and I've often noted that there is seemingly a police overreaction downtown, where a lot of cops come running in suddenly on what seems to be a rather trivial matter. But generally speaking, we're talking about one or two cases where there was this overreaction that you've documented. Mostly, I mean, do you have any have you documented any of the? Through your organization of 1,600 people, when the police have arrived at parties, how many police arrived, how many citations were issued, because this is something you could do, through your own group. You could ask them to give you, you could survey your group, ask for send them out a questionnaire and ask that they fill it out. How many times have you partied in the last year? Has your partying schedule dropped? Mm-hmm. Are more neighbors complaining? Are less neighbors complaining? Have you had any problems with your landlord regarding the deposit? And we should probably talk about that. The ordinance changes also involved a number of other things. There was a reduction of the fine proposed that would reduce the fine from
for first offense
$250, which is actually $800 or $900,
right,
with court costs. Mm-hmm. I'm really amazed that City Attorney John Barisoni said he wasn't aware of that because he isn't aware of it. He's completely incompetent. Of course, I've known for years that he's. I wish to have another city attorney than John Barisoni, much nicer guy as he may be in other respects. There were four parts to this ordinance, the reforms that were offered. I thought most of them weren't significant. I know that you wanted to talk about them. Do you want me to talk about them? Do you want to review them?
I'd like to talk about them. First of all, I would like to address your first question about polling the members in my organization. Most of the time when I do, I receive a lot of horror stories about police mistreatment at the parties, etc., which is understandable, but it obviously holds less clout in a city council meeting like this, and we're more concerned with the bigger issue. You know, one issue is certainly police misconduct and, you know, how students and police communicate with one another, but that's not really, you know, the focus of our organization. We're focused on changing the law, and I definitely would be willing to poll my 1,600 members and ask them, you know, the questions that you propose. That's a good idea. Now, let me first describe this party ordinance. A lot of people read the party ordinance. It's Chapter 9.37 of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code. You can Google it. First of all, it states that the fines are, first of all, you get a warning. Secondly, it's a $250 ticket for a second violation. and then you get a $500 ticket for your third violation, and then a $1,000 ticket for every violation subsequent.
Which is actually three and a quarter times as much as the actual fines, including court costs.
True. And the reason for that, unfortunately, nobody in the court office has that information except the judge herself, but I did speak with her again yesterday, and I confirmed that the multiplier is still 3.4 times plus $35. So that's what the court fees are. It's actually 2.4 times plus $35, but total, it turns a $250 ticket into an $885 ticket, and I received one, so I would know. So that's what we're talking about. The second violation, the second citation, rather than $500, turns into $1,735, and every subsequent violation within 1 year turns into a $3,500 ticket. Which,
how many people have gotten third and fourth violations?
Two. Only two. But rather than that, everybody just kind of stops having parties because, you know, the police warn us that they're going to come back out and issue these. Sometimes they come out and issue, you know, the other violations, which is $400 a pop. You know, which is very generous of them, but knowing that our next party is going to cost us $3,500, you know, we are whispering all day, every day. There's, you know, no reason. It's the definition of the violation is two or more persons on private property or a permitted gathering of two or more persons on public property whose loud or unruly conduct constitutes a threat to public health, safety, quiet enjoyment of residential property or general welfare.
And what's interesting is that that law was in force before 2005, but the phrase quiet enjoyment of residential property was then added to the law. So you heard a lot of talk at last night's city council meeting, or I heard some talk by Emily Riley, who's running for higher office, as I understand it, about you know, parties that are a threat to the public health and safety.
If I can speak real quick on the health and safety part.
But before we do that,
go for it.
The point is that this extra phrase, so the quiet enjoyment of one property, is really the basis on which these fines are being, I think, leveled. Although, I don't know, I haven't been to court. You guys have.
I would agree that that's mostly they're talking about the quiet and enjoyment.
Now, have you been to a court? Have people actually contested this? Have they said, no, we were having a party, but it was not an unruly assembly?
Oh, yeah, every time.
And what kind of defense did you make, and how did that go?
Okay, I presented what I thought was phenomenal defense. First of all, I used Google Earth to take a snapshot of the overhead picture of my property and the neighbors around it. I circled the different properties around my house, and I presented letters corresponding to those properties testifying that they were not disturbed by our house party.
And also that Google Earth map you provided shows that our house is really surrounded by an industrial environment. There's actually a recording studio across the street from us. We have no neighbors to one side of us because we have the bus station storage and an empty lot. So you're talking about an area that doesn't have many people.
Right. So I presented that in court, and I told the judge, first of all, we only have five neighbors within two blocks that we could possibly disturb. Secondly, we have testimonies from these five neighbors that they were not disturbed on this night. They didn't even know we were having a party. Or, you know, we informed them we were going to, but they didn't call us because they weren't disturbed. So I presented that in court, but the officer testified against
us. The name of the officer?
Aldridge.
Oh, no. Go ahead. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
So the officer testified against us that they thought it was some other party house that was having a party the night prior, and they returned there to service a call. And they thought it was going to be that house again. But sure enough, they came outside of their car and heard our party two blocks away and thought, wow, this is outrageous. Let's go over there. That must be where the call was taking place. So they showed up at my house and they told us that in court. And I said, officer, can you tell us where the call was placed? Because, you know, our street is a very long street. It could have been, you know, 25 blocks away. We would have no idea. And no, they could not provide that. What time was the call placed? They couldn't tell us that. How many people called? One person called.
The call wasn't about your party. It was about some other place.
Well, we don't know. I mean, they can't disclose that information.
So in essence, it was a police-initiated action based upon Officer Aldridge's listening, hearing a party he found to be unruly, not that the neighbors found, or if it was a neighbor, that neighbor never showed up in court to testify. Is that right?
True, and it was an anonymous call. So that
well, we have an anonymous caller here. Let's see what's happening.
Great.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio. Well, you were. Call back if you'd like, 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org on the net. In the studio with me, Brian English and the redoubtable Jesse Wilson of the Students for Sane Law Enforcement. No, wait.
Sensible Party Ordinance.
Sensible Party Ordinance, yes. I got to get this right here.
So you're right. I think that the officer was offended by our noise, and I think that's why we received a fine that night. And I tried to present that, you know, as my testimony, too, but the judge decided to
She's not a judge. She is a referee, actually.
Okay.
Kim Baskett.
Kim Baskett, that's right.
In the basement of the county building.
She decided to take the officer's word that our party was extreme and unruly. And
what a surprise. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, we've never actually won in court, but...
Well, I can't expect to win.
Even with... Five neighbors written statements saying that we're not disturbed, and those neighbors were directly next to us, and anybody else would have to be significantly farther than the neighbors that we had testimony from.
The first rule, by the way, if you go to court, is always disqualify referee Kim Baskett. You have one peremptory challenge under what's called 176 CCP, 170.6 CCP is the code section. It's a peremptory challenge. You go up to the window of the county of the basement, and you sign a statement that says, "I believe referee Baskett to be prejudiced, and I want this case sent to another court." You don't have to prove anything. You have a right to a peremptory challenge. You only have one challenge.
And then what court is that transferred to?
It will then be transferred to court upstairs, which is either the court of Deneen Guy, who is no big improvement, but she is a judge. She's not a referee. Mm. So she's supposed to hear and provide, you know, she, for example, presides over jury trials, which you won't get because this is an infraction, even though it's a rather costly infraction. But she has had that experience, and also she's more likely to be a little bit nervous about who's watching. Baskett is, as I said, like, she turns out fines. We used to say her predecessor, Mad Dog Mulligan, as we called him, John Mulligan, turns out fines like sausages. Similarly, Baskett seems to be following in Mulligan's footsteps, although she has a very kind of amiable demeanor. I mean, Kim is a very nice woman. She's just, it's like, you know, you put a nice woman in the Gestapo and they act in a certain way. So, unfortunately, that's what you get often. I find these, similarly with the city council, actually. But, so, in the studio with me again, we have... two guys who are trying to organize to change the law. Of course, as far as I'm concerned, it's now a done deal slam dunk, and it probably was from the very beginning. That doesn't mean, however, that the kind of organizing you do and educating the community can't be helpful in some other way, because there are other ways to proceed than through the city council. Direct action, lawsuits against the police department, mass demonstrations, initiatives to change the law, which you can get, but if you get 4,000, you actually need about 6,000 because you need 4,000 valid signatures. So you got to get about 6,000 to change the law by citizen vote, putting it on the ballot. The problem you have is you have active neighborhood right-wing groups, such as the Santa Cruz Neighbors, Downtown Neighbors, and the police department itself lobbying to give the police more power to, in essence, impose their own standards, Officer Aldridge's standards on the community.
And there's Chancellor Blumenthal now.
Chancellor Blumenthal?
Are you aware of?
Tell me about Chancellor Blumenthal.
Okay, Chancellor Blumenthal just took office as the UCSC chancellor recently, 1 year ago, and decided that further enforcement of the Santa Cruz Party Ordinance, which is the focus of our discussion tonight, is required. So he began donating $25,000 of UCSC tuition toward further enforcement of the party ordinance, and in order to pay police overtime, which is normally $56 an hour. So $25,000 a quarter is being donated to the police department to bus parties.
You know, and that really makes no sense why the university should feel obligated at all to pay any costs about the police in the city in regards to, say, student parties, because all these people that own these homes, you know why their property value is so high? Do you know why they're so rich now for owning a home for many years in Santa Cruz? It's the expansion of UCSC. UCSC getting bigger, the students demanding housing and rental. You know, a lot of these people are making thousands of dollars a month off renters, but they want to have it both ways. They want peace and quiet. You know, students don't party. Students aren't supposed to party. But I want to make as much profit off you at the same time.
You know, I'm thinking, I wrote all kinds of notes about this city council meeting and what I found wrong with the debate. And the problem is all of us, I'm sure, in the studio here agree, and maybe even the people listening to this radio station, the small number of people listening, also agree. But the question is, what can be done to not only change this, but deal with broader issues? You know, I mean, while we're talking about this, you know, there's $14 billion a month being pissed away over in Iraq. And, you know, there's a week of anti-war activity going on up at the campus, which probably has been ignored by almost everybody in a depressing way while we talk about, you know, partying ordinances, which, you know, I think it's a civil rights issue, a civil liberties issue, and it's an important one. And that's why I have you guys in the studio. But I also think, you know, there are other issues, too. But the question is, if such a simple issue as this, when you get 16,000 students together, we're talking about 16,000.
1,600, yeah.
Sorry, 1,600. Get busy. I want 16,000.
I'm working on it.
All right. 1,600 students, is that, that's local people?
Who local.
And only 50 of them could show up. Were there 50 students in the audience?
Absolutely, yes.
It was quoted by, what's her name?
Sentinel, yeah.
Did you count 50 yourself?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Okay, well, of course, we know this issue goes back to city council. I believe Rotkin, in his great beneficence, and I'm sarcastic about Rotkin because he's the one who passed this stupid ordinance in
sure.
the first place. And the changes he proposed are in no way adequate as far as I'm concerned. I've talked about this before. I mean, the main thing, I'm surprised that you guys accepted it. I think, you know, I would suggest if you have a lot of student power and people willing to actually do stuff, that you push an initiative around the issue. You know, you could. It's not that expensive. You just got to get people to sign. I think it's a certain number of people to sign that they want to do an initiative, and then you got to get at least 10 or 20 students regularly gathering signatures for about, you know, I don't know, a couple hours a week, which may not be easy. But if you got 1,600 people who at least have signed their name, maybe you'll get a smaller minority of those who are willing to do something. The problem is then going to be you're going to have to deal with the issue that you really want to deal with, which is to say, non-police interaction between the neighbors and partygoers and party makers so that there can be a real, you know, like a code of conduct that partygoers use or party makers do. So that maybe you have there been other cities where laws like this have been proposed and defeated and other solutions adopted that you can propose?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I wanted to talk about that. San Luis Obispo came out with a campaign called Respect Slow Bro. It's respectslowbro.com. It's actually put together by the police department, but they have representatives from the student body, from the Neighbors Association, whatever it is down there, and the police department actually working together. How do we mediate the situation where the students naturally gather? It's an obvious fact of college attendance. Neighbors are trying to sleep, you know, earlier than we are. And how do you mediate the differences? Do you just impose a zero tolerance policy? That's not what SLO's doing. SLO has come out with different resources. They also have mediation services. I know that we have one, but they don't really focus on this type of mediation. So I would totally agree with putting something together like that with the police department. But in my experience up till now, they've been very one-sided. They've been very anti-student and very anti-party. And it's a crime, period.
What? Just real quick, on we talked a lot about students, but Jesse and I have actually both graduated, and a lot of these people that are still having problems with this are, you know, people in their 20s, people older as well. So it's actually affecting more than just students, and I don't want to just focus on, you know, students trying to party. It's actually a lot of people, musicians, trying to have, you know, concerts after 10 that may not even be that loud, you know. And I think it's important to be able to have this type of, you know, enjoyment in Santa Cruz.
You originally talked to Mayor Ryan Coonerty on this issue, right? The two of you, or?
Yeah, I met with him quite a bit.
How much time did you spend talking to him?
Well, I went to his office hours at UCSC. We spent probably an hour together there.
He was invited on the show, by the way, and he declined to come on.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. I also met with him, you know, downtown at a restaurant once or twice. I've spoken with him on the phone. I've exchanged emails with him. One of them was very important, actually, because I outlined all the changes I wanted to see in the ordinance.
Perhaps you can get that email to me.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd like to see it.
Post it on the website if possible, yeah. He and Ryan Coonerty both responded to it. I emailed it to every council member individually. Nobody else responded. But they, too, responded, and they agreed with most of the, you know, resolutions that I provided.
Now, did you ask for the deletion of that quiet enjoyment of the property or some kind of modification of it so that It couldn't be used as a blanket excuse by officers like Aldridge to impose their own standards through a compliant referee like Kim Baskett.
I did not ask that, but I have asked the police department whether the police were allowed to bust our parties because they personally were offended, and the answer was no from the police department, which was very surprising to me because I got the impression that police were busting parties all the time because they were actively seeking them out.
Police will drive around some of the most populous streets where students congregate, and to my belief, they will just show up and try to bust parties.
And what is your belief based on?
My belief is based on the fact that, first of all, our experience with our house, where we had the officers, was it Aldridge, say, or heard something two blocks down or something like that, and the fact that we just see cops cruising up and down some of the same streets all the time.
But they could be cruising for other reasons.
That is true.
See, that's why I think it's important that you really sit down and monitor your group for all these issues and see if they've had any experience with them. You know, get a real clear sample of that from them. Then you have more information to go on.
The thing is, though, you can never really defend yourself against this. You can never find out who your accuser is.
Well, that could be a part of the law. Usually, if you are either sued civilly or there's a criminal charge leveled against you, and you know, if the officer himself does not see the crime and somebody else sees the crime, they have to testify personally and they have to file a complaint. They have to make the citizen's arrest, in essence.
Right. We feel very helpless in this regard.
Well, you can change the law, but that wasn't a part of your legal change that you proposed.
We didn't propose those four changes. That was Mike Rodkin's proposal.
Well, watch out. Mike Rodkin is one of the biggest supporters of the police department in town, and you know, he's notorious for supporting things like the sleeping ban. He tried to have City Hall closed at night to eliminate protesters in 1996. He's an amiable guy. He's the only council member who actually come on the air with me in this station. We've had him on the air recently around the repressive city council Coonerty laws that cut back public discussion. But no one should have any illusions about where he really is on this. He appears to be liberal because he was the only vote in favor of even these limited changes. But the changes themselves, even the reduction of the fine, was not particularly significant.
It was still $400 for a first offense, yeah.
And again, the issue that Madrigal and others used against you was that, well, we mean for there to be a fine. We mean for you to be scared. And the answer to that is we should be, you know, deterred from illegal behavior. The question is whether this is deterring a lot of legal behavior.
That's a really good point because, you know, there's two sides to this. There's the people that are affected by actual unruly parties that may be damaging property, being way too loud, you know, where someone has, you know, lives in a townhouse or something like that and shares walls and it's being too loud, that type of thing. And then the people that I feel like us, who are not really disturbing anyone, as our neighbors testified in court via written statements. And there's nothing in this law that separates those two things. So you've got the complaints by the neighbors, and that's what their problem is these unruly parties. But it's a blanket ordinance.
We can also talk about what you can do in the interim. I mean, I don't see this current reform going anywhere, although I think you should use it as a forum to illustrate what is really happening at the city council and how this city government, in essence, is acting as a sort of an appendage of the police department and conservative community organizations. But, you know, what you can do is you can and you should make Public Records Act requests to the police department. They can't charge you for a Public Records Act request except for the cost of copying. You have a right to look at every citation issued, unless there's a minor or a sex offense issue involved. So if they're issuing citations, you have a right to see them. You have a right to see the citation. You might not have a right to see the police reports, but you might have a right to see the citations and know, and because those are public records. That's my understanding. You should get a lawyer who's sympathetic, who wants to be helpful to you on this issue, to be kind of give you advice on this, but also you should educate yourselves, and I encourage members of the community to do the same, on the Public Records Act. The right that you have to look at the records the police department has, not if they feel like it, but because you have some, you know, you're willing to go to court to get them if they aren't going to give it to you. And in so doing, you also should do, I would, and again, this isn't my issue, and I haven't the expertise in it that you have through your own work, because you've been working on it for 2.5 years, but the kind of outreach to the community that you made to your five neighbors is what you need to do. You need to go around and ask, you know, how many unruly parties have you had problems with? And when there was an unruly party, what was the biggest frustration you had? And because we feel these ordinances are really abusive and are stopping a lot of people from, you know, or actually quiet enjoyment of their property. The ordinance itself stops you from quiet enjoyment of your property, or let's say reasonably loud enjoyment of your property, enjoyment of your property, period. You need to get from the neighbors, both those who would be harsh critics, but more important, those who are sort of in the middle, what their problems are in dealing with complaints. And because we're in a society that's increasingly scared. People are afraid to talk to each other. People are afraid of, they believe what the government says.
I mean, that's totally right. Even when we give, we have one neighbor specifically who will call the police on us. And this person is so far away from us, there is no way that they can be bothered by noise when they're inside with their door closed. But they are up on a hill, sort of, and they can see when cars are parked out in front of our house. And they'll just call the cops there. And we have told this neighbor before, if you're having a problem with one of our parties, please call us. We will immediately disperse the party. But this person, like you're saying, doesn't want to talk to us, wants to be disconnected. Just call the police instead of trying to communicate with one of their neighbors.
It has to be said also that the police are running seminars with the Downtown Association encouraging people to call the cops, not so much on the unruly assembly business, but on other matters like a person sitting next to a building, which is now a crime in Santa Cruz. If you're sitting within 14 feet of a building, that's a crime. On the sidewalk, if you are sitting with an open guitar case playing music closer than 10 feet to a building, that's a crime.
Which is really sad, because that's the character of Santa Cruz that differentiates it from so many other places you visit.
Yeah, again, that's a Rotkin Matthews law. They brought these laws in, they voted for them. Coonerty's father, Neil Coonerty, who's now the supervisor, voted for those laws. And Ryan Coonerty, of course, has pushed the latest parking lot panic law, as I call it, that makes it illegal to sit in your car for 16 minutes in a parking lot now. It's now illegal to do that. You have to be in the process of retrieving or parking your vehicle. Otherwise, you can't sit down under a tree in a parking lot. That's illegal. That's the Coonerty parking lot trespass law. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. We're getting a deluge of phone calls, 427-3772. In the studio with me are Brian and Jesse. I'm Robert. And in case you want to call in, hey, I mean, you know, you can add another voice to this lonely trio of tirading types here. The issue we're talking about is the unruly party law, which was passed in 2005 and came up for a few amendments last Tuesday, three of which were passed by the city council. I guess we should specify what those are. They establish a hearing officer to check this, and who, if you weren't in the house at the time and you can prove it or some such thing. Let me take a look at this.
Sure.
Prohibits landlords from charging tenants a fee or deposit or increased rent before a residential unit has been found in violation of the ordinance. So what that means is that if the landlord has, somebody's been acting like a wild, crazy party person and moves out, the landlord can charge a huge fee for the next people that move in if there's been one violation found. That does not sound fair to me. I mean, that sounds peculiar. And so I wonder why this doesn't prohibit landlords from charging fees at all around this issue. Of course, I want to understand from the landlord's point of view. I guess they're worried that it's going to cause the tenant to go bankrupt. Does a landlord suffer a penalty here?
Oh, yeah. Landlord is jointly and severally liable for the fine. So every person on the lease and the landlord are all jointly and severally liable for these egregious fines, $885 for your first offense, etc. So the landlord may think, wow, this is a fantastic party house. I know I'm renting to, you know, 8 college students. Something's bound to happen. Let's just charge them this extra deposit in case they might get this ordinance filed against them.
Is that happening?
No. That I didn't really care about that. I didn't present that issue to.
But did you notice that? I mean, are landlords doing that? Have you gotten complaints from your 1,600 members that that's happening?
No.
So in other words, you didn't even propose this. This was something that Rotkin and Coonerty came up with.
Well, it's one of those things where they want to make it seem like, you know, oh, we're making changes for
right,
you guys,
of course,
but
yeah.
You know, they put in a bunch of filler, kind of.
Sure, that was Rotkin's idea.
And as I point out, the filler isn't even very substantial filler. If you're going to stop them from charging a fee, stop them from charging a fee. Period. Although I guess you're saying, well, since they're jointly liable, they do have a problem that they have to be careful about. I guess they could do other things than charge a fee. But the third thing is create a Well, the second other, there are four aspects of this. First was to reduce the fine, but only for the first violation, and not to return it to the what would have been the original cost,
right?
If it were really actually, what is it, $250,
yeah,
instead of being $800, $900.
And to jump in, the city council had no idea about the court multiplier. We informed them of that.
Yeah, well, neither did the city attorney, apparently, or the city attorney didn't seem to understand that it has gone up. He was asked by Emily Riley or somebody, has this multiplier gone up in the last decade? And he said, no, that's not true. It has gone up.
Right.
I followed it around the sleeping ban. It was a sleeping ban ticket in 1999 was $20, but when it reached court, it became $54. The same $20 ticket is now $97. That's how much it is. Now, the point here is that Barrasoni should know this. He's not informing the council about the fact that there is a rise in this court cost. But what you tried to do here was that you wanted to have the fines reduced generally. Instead, Rotkin proposed this slight reduction of the fines. He proposed halving the fines, but in fact they're really being tripled from what they had purportedly been
this,
supposed
you know,
to
that's,
do.
That's correct. So since we know they were ignorant of this court multiplier, we clearly can detect what they thought was a fair amount to charge. Now, I disagree with that amount as well, but clearly they thought that the first violation should be $250, and you know that was their intent. And when they eventually got these neighbors breathing down their neck, you know, then you know we saw Coonerty back down. I think if there had been more support, Tony Madrigal, yeah, he would have voted for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I guess something came up while you were saying that, if I can remember it. Were you at the discussion of the 2005 ordinance? Were you there in the city council chambers and it was being discussed?
No, actually, they did it during summer, so they were
right.
Like, no,
that was
another
Rotkin maneuver. He made it a point to say, we wanted to discuss this when the students are around.
This time, I told him.
But he didn't mention that the last time they hadn't, and that had been under his mayorship at his initiative.
Right.
He's the one who cooked up that law, and he's the one who set the agenda.
And I told him that, hey, the students weren't around. No wonder there was no opposition to the ordinance, because, you know, he used that in the press. Well, according to no opposition to this ordinance, it passes by unanimous
vote. And even if there is opposition, as you pointed out, student critics outnumbered. I'm not sure. It would have been better if all 50 students had spoken, of course.
True.
And then maybe what you need to do at the next hearing is just demonstrate the hypocrisy of the city council to have as many students as possible speak on the ordinance. And if you can, get this study out, too, you know, as to what's actually going on in terms of what the real concerns of neighbors are. And what you really should do, and what you really need to do, is get neighbors who are willing to see this ordinance change and get them to come to the city council.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that you did that.
No.
And that's what needs to be done, too.
It's pretty hard to organize that, but it's definitely worth a shot. That's definitely, you know.
It means going door to door and saying, you know, and you have to put it differently. You have to put it as a sort of a community mediation effort, saving money on the police department, trying to find a way of, you know, the community working together instead of simply calling the cops every time something is wrong. And also you can do it as a survey. You can say, we're surveying, have you had problems with party ordinances? Are people doing unruly parties nearby? Did you have problems before 2005? What do you do when you have a problem? How effective is the police response? Do they respond quickly? In other words, you have a whole series of questions you ask them. And then in the course of that, you then talk about, well, you know, we're with a group that's trying to kind of evolve a different mode of doing this, and some people might say, get out of my house, we don't want you here. And others would say, oh, you know, some would say, I'm too sleepy to talk about it. Who knows? So there were four aspects to this proposed ordinance change: reducing the fine slightly by half, but not back to what it would have been before. So it isn't even a real reduction of the fine.
Mm-hmm.
Prohibit landlords from charging a fee or deposit if a residential unit has been found in violation. Create a city administrative hearing officer with the authority to dismiss fees or fines levied against tenants or landlords who are not, in fact, responsible for unruly parties at a particular residential property. And I haven't looked at that section carefully. Do you have to prove it? I guess you probably have to prove you're not responsible for that.
Yeah, I believe you have to prove that you were not there at least 24 hours prior to the violation. It has to be with, like, a plane ticket. You can't even be like, well, I was at my parents' house 300 miles away. Mm-hmm. You need, like, paper evidence.
And then finally, four, you have to clarify that written warnings to be mailed to occupants, tenants, landlords, and other persons responsible for unruly parties under the ordinance, how would that change it? What's the change there? That's a minor change. Is it a change at all? The fourth segment that says they have to mail
written warnings. Actually, that's pretty important to me because at the first warning that my house received, the officers told us it was a warning, wrote warning on the ticket, handed it to me. I said, okay, well, thanks for giving us a warning. I thought that meant no fine. Warning normally means no fine. Well, 2 weeks later, I received an $885 ticket. I thought this must be a mistake. I contacted the court, and they said, no, the police filed, you know, this warning citation, and according to the municipal code, 9.37, this constitutes a first violation. And I said, but it reads in the municipal code that it's just a warning. One warning must be given. And I told that to the judge when I contested the ticket.
Referee Kim Basket.
And she said the warning only pertains to the civil section of the ordinance 9.37.030 and that your first warning actually constitutes the first violation of the ordinance the way it's written. So when I
The ordinance or the criminal aspect of the ordinance? This is a fee supposedly to collect to pay for police services. Isn't that the motivation here? I mean, that's the plausible.
What do I pay taxes for?
Right. Well, true. The point of the is, however, that a devil's advocate would say, well, yeah, but, you know, if you are particularly responsible for incurring greater police behavior, then you are responsible for paying for those services. I mean, although I think you pointed out and other activists pointed out that other kinds of crimes, you don't have to pay for the police services to come there.
That's true. Actually, it's interesting. I have a friend right now who was falsely accused of robbery and assault. And this guy was nowhere near, but he was picked out by someone that was, assaulted and robbed. Mm-hmm. And I asked him about this before coming on the radio. Are they trying to stick you with any court costs? And he said no.
Right, but he was innocent, and that was pointed out by the...
Well, no, he hasn't gone to trial yet, but he's asking how much the total fees will be.
Right.
Are there any court cost multipliers associated?
Right, but remember what Rodkin and others have said, or, you know, maybe it was the other majority there, that if you're not guilty of these crimes, you don't have to pay any of the fines, you don't have to pay any of the fees. The question is, of course, will you ever get such a ruling from someone so closely, so credulously believing of the police accounts and so unwilling to consider what seems to me, if you're accurately describing your evidence, to be really evidence that would at least show reasonable doubt and might actually show a preponderance of the evidence.
Okay, well, let me clarify that real quick. There is no way to contest the wording of the ordinance that finds a person guilty, which is the officer has determined that a loud or unruly gathering exists. This is one officer's opinion. And it describes two or more persons on private property being loud or unruly.
Well, no, it's remember what it says. It says two or more persons on private property whose loud or unruly conduct constitutes a threat to public health, safety, quiet enjoyment, or residential property or general welfare, including violations of Chapter 9.36. And 9.36 is, of course, I believe that's the noise ordinance.
Yes.
And maybe that's what you got the citation for, was 9.36. Is that... Did you get a citation for the $185 citation that you thought was just involved with the warning? Was it an additional citation, or was it a citation for the 9.36, the other ordinance?
You know, I've gotten a few 9.36 violations before, but this one that I call my party ordinance violation, that was 9.37. So I'm positive. It was a violation of 9.37.020.
So they are claiming that there's both a civil and a criminal aspect of this where you can be... Even though you'll only be warned for the $885 fine, mm-hmm. you'll still get a $185 citation for the criminal side of the 9.37.
No, what it's actually saying is that you'll only be warned for the special security services, which has no dollar amount attached to it. That's determined later. But you do not get warned for the first violation, which is the $885 ticket. So I got an $885 ticket for my first warning, quote-unquote, because that first warning was only warning me about the special security assessment of paying for police overtime.
Now, you know, we got this.
It is very confusing.
I think we were one of the first people to get this violation and in court. Now, maybe they've talked to the referee or talked to the police, and warnings aren't turning into $885 fines. We're not sure of that. And you're right, we should probably pull the organization and see other people that have had warnings and see what they actually paid.
You know, I'm...
It's very confusing.
In the studio with me, we're talking with Brian English and Jesse Wilson, students, former students, now just members of the community. I caught you at your business, right? You have what kind of a business do you do?
I sell real estate, and I'm a rental property manager. I have 128 units that I'm a manager for.
A real estate gouger, and what are you, sir?
I design professional audio software.
And a Silicon Valley refugee, perhaps.
It's in Scotts Valley, actually.
Aha. So, you guys are respectable business people. You're engaged in legitimate business. So, the issue here is not simply a bunch of callow students who want to whoop it up all day and all night, but people who are... What drew your attention to this? Why have you spent so much time getting involved with this whole issue?
Well, because I like to gather with my peers, and so does everybody our age. And most of the all the time, we're doing it legally. And it's impossible to tell whether we're offending somebody else or not.
There's also the scenario that we're in. Our house is a very cool house. It's got a backyard where we have the San Lorenzo River access. And it's a great place to bring people over during the day, be it at night, have a bonfire on my own property. Maybe that's illegal, too. I don't know. But it's the scenario. Where we are is a great place to enjoy life, and we want to share that with other people as well. On top of that, there are very few neighbors around us, and we know that our close neighbors who would be the only ones offended by our noise are not offended by our noise. So it's not just that we want to enjoy this, it's that we feel like our rights are being violated.
Did you guys originally cook this up yourselves, or did people come to you and say, we want you to do this? In other words, how much of it has come from you initially, or how much of it has come from people coming to you saying,
well,
we want you to do
the
this?
The actual organization has been spearheaded by Jesse. But one of the reasons that Jesse spearheaded this, and I want to speak for him, but... When this passed and people were talking about it, everybody that we talked about it in the student community was very upset about it.
Now, were there any public meetings? I emailed Mike Rotkin to ask if he'd gone to any public meetings about the issue, because I found these proposed reforms wholly inadequate. Again, the idea that it's fine to tell people to keep the damn noise down, and if they don't keep the noise down, to penalize them for doing so. And there are ordinances on the books that do this, but to establish huge fines and to put it essentially as a matter of officer discretion and to add language that makes it very easy for the officer to do this, to me seemed a dangerous kind of precedent, similar to what they do downtown with poor people. That is, they give the police huge amounts of essentially discretion as to whether they can cite people. Anytime you see a person sitting on the sidewalk with a sign that asks for money, that's illegal in Santa Cruz. You are not allowed to sit on public property and solicit. That's illegal. Alone, at any time of the day or night, it's illegal. So the police officer, in theory, can go after people. Now, police don't use that part of the law. Ironically, you bring your own chair, you can sit down and solicit. If you stand and hold a sign, you can solicit, provided you're 14 feet away from a building, 14 feet away from a crosswalk, 50 feet away from an ATM or change-making machine. But the point is, a whole set of laws was set up downtown to give the police the power to remove people they don't like. And if they can't find, if people still try to stay there, they'll remove the benches that they're sitting on, as they did in front of Borders recently. Or they'll put in a new change machine. There are actually four different change machines around the metro that are put in specifically to make it illegal for people to sit down around there. I mean, you don't need four different change machines, you know, next to on the Pacific side of the metro bus terminal. You got one across the street. You got one, you know, across from the Western Union area. You've got them all over the place. So I'm concerned that the police are being given too much power and too much responsibility. I mean, you know, the community needs to resolve these problems. We don't need to hand the men with guns and paramilitary training. They may be the best and most public-spirited people in the world, but it's the wrong thing to do to give them this responsibility. And that's why I'm interested in seeing more community solutions to these problems.
We totally agree with that. It wouldn't really take much from a neighbor that had a problem with a lot of these houses to get an improvement in this. I mean, the neighbor would just have to come to the student or resident and say, hey, you know, I'm having a real problem when you do this or that. You know, you can do it till this hour, and I wouldn't have a problem with it. And just some communication would prevent, you know, public costs of police time, fines, all this kind of stuff. And so I think you're spot on talking about the community working together is one of the biggest missing pieces that hasn't been talked about in this issue.
You know, one thing you might do is you might get a volunteer or pay someone to actually be a party coordinator monitor person and put out that information in the community and say that if any time of the day or night there's a party that's a problem, call this person. He will and tell the person what the address is, and he will attempt to contact the people at the party and to keep it down so that you don't have to involve the police in this and you don't have to involve the party in huge fines. In other words, give the people an alternate avenue. And then you also might find, you know, that there is more problem getting parties to damp down than you thought. I mean, I don't know if there is or not. I mean, you may find that not everybody is as respectful of the community as you guys claim to be.
Well, I've been to hundreds of parties in Santa Cruz. I know exactly what's happening. And you're right. I mean, most of the time, you can kill the party by asking people to leave. You just turn off the music or put on some, like, you know, Jack Johnson, and everybody leaves. In my experience, that's how I get the party dispersed. That's a lot better than
calling the Mamas and the Papas. Is right.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, there's a lot of music.
I like the Mamas and the Papas. But anyway.
But anyway, there's a lot of ways you can disperse a party besides calling the police. But the police department actually opposes that policy of dispersing a party yourself. And they encourage...
I don't care what the police department opposes. I'm concerned about whether members of the community will rise to the bait and like your idea. The police department can say whatever it wants. The police department will say whatever it wants. Mm-hmm. They like to keep the power in their own hands. And sometimes they legitimately have these rather blinkered, traditional views of how things should proceed, mm-hmm. which, you know, in some cases they're right, and in some cases they're wrong. But that doesn't mean, that should not inhibit you from seeking new solutions. Don't go to the police department or the city council or the city manager or the city attorney for, you know, validation. Go to other people who have this kind of problem and go to the residents who have this concern and say, what do you think of this idea? We have a caller. Could this be? Nope. There was only one ring. Now, what's going on here? Come on, call again, 427-3772. That's the call-in number here. Unless there's something wrong with the phone, which I don't know, but I'm hoping there isn't. Why don't we have a sample caller? If anybody is listening to this show and wants to just give it a try, give us a call here to see if you can actually call us, 427-3772. You can say hello to Brian. You can say hello to Jesse. Let him know, you know, it's not a complete waste of time. They're coming into the studio here. And we can also see if the phone works. So, 427-3772. Hope somebody calls in. I do a lot of other things on this show than this particular thing we're doing. I want to talk some more about it, but I'm going to move to another topic. That's one call. Let's see if we can get a second ring here. Yeah. All right, you're on Free Radio with the Big Three here.
Hey there.
Hi.
Just calling in to say hi to everyone. They asked to check and call and see if the phone is working.
Well, I appreciate that. Have you been put to sleep by the three of us, or?
What's that?
Have you been following any of the conversation?
Yes, I have.
Are you a party animal?
What's that?
Do you party?
Of course I party.
And have you been the recipient of any police surveillance or obstruction?
Yeah, I've had a few cops stop by.
And did they give you any unruly party tickets?
No, not yet. I'm Jesse and Brian's housemate, and I just moved
into
the
typical,
house.
Oh, typical. Oh, fine. Well,
thanks, Andy.
You bet, guys.
All right, thanks for calling in, Andy.
Take it easy.
All right. So we know at least one other person is listening. How comforting. Wow. I'm going to... play a little music here, take a breather, and you all can take a breather out there too, and we'll see what happens next. Again, I'm reminding you that if you want to get in touch with either of our guests, Brian or Jesse, you can do this by
Jesse Wilson, California. Facebook, you could Facebook me, Jesse Wilson, JESSE, or you can Facebook the name Santa Cruz Party Ordinance, and we come out right on top, and that's our 1,600-member congregation center. That's where I can access everybody to get a hold of them.
You can also contact me, Brian, at brianenglish.com.
Mm-hmm.
So there.
Love comes when you least suspect it. Love dances in honor of him. I thought maybe I could direct it, but I never expected a guy like him. He was a bully and a brute. He was as crazy as a coot. Still, I didn't give a hoot. He was my boyfriend. With every woman he would flirt. He always treated me like dirt, but I was happy to be hurt. He was my boyfriend. I was as pure as a virgin meadow, lying fit-fitter in the gloam. Then he turned to me, that charmer, whispered, "Let's play farmer," and plowed me till the cows came home. He was a monster and a beast. His midnight bangings never ceased. It didn't faze me in the least. He was my boyfriend. I'll never forget the first time I met Victor. It was on the village green at the annual Bock Beer Festival, where every beer cost a buck. I was an innocent young lamb, and he was a dirty old goat. We were made for each other. All of a sudden, he took out his paraphernalia and shouted, "Let's play croquet!" And off to the field we went. He carried his hoops and mallets, and I carried his balls. Oh, what a festival! Fun and games all day long. Archery, badminton, potato sack. Victor won the three-legged race all by himself. It was love at first sight. He was a bond that I gave my heart to, but we never wed even so. If I mention wedlock, he put me in a headlock. When I asked to be his wife, he stabbed me with a kitchen knife. Ah, where did the good times go? If he had an angry fit, I was the first thing that he hit. But I didn't give a shit. He was my boyfriend. Yes!
He was my boyfriend from Young Frankenstein. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert North. Got about 45 minutes left in the show. And on the air with us is a caller. Hi, caller.
Hi, this is Michaela calling in.
Who?
Huh?
Who?
Michaela.
Michaela. Go ahead, Michaela.
I was just wondering when the next city council meeting was about this issue and how you can get involved.
Sure. The next city council meeting is the second Tuesday in... Well, the next city council meeting is the fourth Tuesday in March, but the city council meeting where this will come up as an agenda item will be the second Tuesday in April, unless they have some special deal, and it'll probably be on the evening agenda, although you got to watch very carefully. This is a very tricky city council, I should say a tricky mayor. The mayor sets the city council agenda. The agenda is set on the Thursday before the Tuesday. You can also go to the next city council meeting and speak either at the beginning of the afternoon session, which is at 3 o'clock, or at the beginning of the evening session, which is at 7 o'clock, again, the fourth Tuesday in March.
Uh-huh.
And talk about this issue of what's called oral communications, which is the little bit of squeaking that the mayor allows the community to do before he lowers the gavel. You get 2 minutes to try to rush to say something. Although I also want to point out, if you announce you are heading an organization, and you are, if you have an organization behind you, and you do, you get 4 minutes if you let them know in advance. So keep that in mind.
Cool. 4 minutes.
I didn't get 4 minutes to speak, and I'm the head of a pretty big organization.
Did you tell them before that you were requesting 4 minutes to speak? You have to be very specific.
The first thing I said is, may I get some extra time?
Right, you have
I
to say it before the meeting. You have to do it, like, before 3 o'clock. You have to actually send them an email. That's their little procedure.
Like days.
Yeah, several years beforehand is best.
Years,
but if you can't do that,
would be it.
You can do it. If you do it, I think, on the day, but before the meeting itself, that might work. But do it a day before to be sure. Used to be you got 5 minutes, but Ryan Coonerty is trying to move things along, and therefore you only get 4 minutes. Used to get 3 minutes as an individual, but now, in order to speed things up, you get 2 minutes.
Wow.
And it's actually been pointed out, there's really an interesting article on IndieBay.org. You're familiar, caller, with IndieBay.org?
Uh-huh.
Yes?
Yeah, go on. I've never heard of that, but yeah, go on.
It's Indie Media. It's a website that has a lot of local stories. I write a lot for it. And if you go to IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz, or just Google for Santa Cruz Indie Media, and then when you get there, you'll find on the right side of the screen several stories about this whole issue, which is the unruly assembly law. And so anyway, you're looking to come to city council, huh?
Yes, I was actually there.
Oh, you were? Did you get to speak?
No, I didn't speak. But
you were afraid to stand up and talk. Admit it.
I was. I'm shy, but I watched.
No, it's understandable. And besides, it also feels kind of pointless. Why embarrass yourself in front of a bunch of people who aren't listening anyway?
Yeah, and who don't really seem like they care. And
there's no dialogue.
The answer is, and the reason you should do it, is not because you're going to get them to listen, but because you're talking to the community and you're preparing yourself to speak before other people. And this is not going to be the only issue in your life you're going to talk about, and so that's why it's useful to do that. Even though it feels awkward the first two or three times you do.
Yeah, I think next time I'll go up and speak.
Yeah, I think I and people who support reduction of the fines of the party ordinance or whatever else we should support should probably start coming out to every city council meeting and just speaking for 2 minutes just to remind them, you know, our biggest concerns.
And more important than the city council, you need to go to other neighborhood groups and speak.
We tried to attend some of the neighborhood association meetings.
Mm-hmm.
They did not reply to our request to join or find out.
The way you do that is you go to Santa Cruz Neighbors. They have a website, and they announce their meetings publicly.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, there's one coming up, I believe, March 26th. I think I sent you an email on that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're going to listen to you for very long. You really need to form your own meetings. That's why I say you should go door to door. You should set up an initiative, have some meetings with students and other people, musicians, musical groups, so that you can, you know, raise the issue among people who give a shit and who want to put some energy into it. Caller, do you have any questions or anything else you would like to say about this issue?
No. Good luck.
Hey, thank you very much. And remember, if you want to get in touch with either, you know, Brian or with Jesse, you know how, right?
Yes, I live with them.
Oh, well, fine. Be that way. My goodness. We're getting all the people, you and Andy, together at last. Hey, all right. Thank
I know,
you very
I know,
much.
But it's, right. We're supporting them.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, good luck.
All guys. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The whole issue of the city council, I spend interminable amounts of time on what seems like minuscule issues, like when I spent, you guys definitely didn't hear it, but I talked about the consent agenda, which is the agenda which they pass with one vote. They put 30 items on one agenda, and they passed all with no discussion, unless you get them to pull an item off. In the past, any member of the community could pull an item off. Under the new Coonerty rules, you have to beg, persuade, plead, and coax them into doing it, and they can refuse to do it. But to make sure that they don't violate the Brown Act, which is the law that says they have to allow some public discussion on every item, they say, well, we'll let you talk for 2 minutes on this entire consent agenda, which has anywhere between 6 and 30 items. So you don't get much time to talk about the items.
Nope.
So it's, you know, but the real question is it worth any discussion at all? And here's a guy who wrote into the story. I wrote a story about this whole issue called Mayor Coonerty's New Rules Ban Public Comment on Half of City Council Afternoon Agenda. And I went through the details of how this happened and what it was about. And you can read about it on IndieBay.org.
I did read that. It's a good article.
Thank you. Yeah. The last comment is really very pertinent. It's called Why Pretend by Rico. And Rico is a guy, it's Rico Thunder. He holds, he engages in direct action. So, for example, even though they've made it illegal to walk into a parking lot or garage without a vehicle, he holds big square dances up there, you know, where it's not interfering with vehicles on Sundays. And they ignore it because they don't want to ticket 50 people. And he also is, he's part of the trash orchestra. He comes down and plays these the trash orchestra
they're
instruments.
Great.
And they're great, yeah. You know, they stopped the police from closing down the drum circle on Wednesday next to the farmer's market because, again, the police did not want to go up against a lot of people who are, they'd have to ticket. And the real issue, the real lesson here is that the police and the, and I would say authorities generally, are relying on your willingness to censor and police yourself. They're relying on your willingness to be your own internal cop, your willingness to be afraid and to follow their rules, even though no one's watching you. And the answer to that, obviously, is you need to make your own decisions on that. But if you do together in a, together with a group of people, it's easier to say no to this kind of crap. Whether you can say no to the unruly assemblies law, it's a little harder because, you know, there is a genuine, and this is why you have to address it, a genuine concern in the community about some parties that are too loud. And you have to be able to persuasively argue that existing law or pre-existing laws really meet the problem. And if they don't, there are better ways to do it than this law that they proposed, which adds quiet enjoyment of the property. You shouldn't have to have quiet enjoyment of the property. An assembly of two people or more, no one's even challenged this law. You probably should take it into the court.
I mean, that requires a little more money than I've got to dispose right now. But, yeah, I would love to know of an attorney who hears cases and represents party hosts for stuff like this in the area who might be affordable. I would definitely use that next time I get a ticket.
You've got 1,600 people. You know, you need – and, you know, you might be able to find some people. One of the arguments used against you, I guess I'll probably, since I'm devoting most of the show to the soul issue, I usually don't spend this much time on these issues, soul issues, but it was said at the city council, well, if you can afford to have everybody can go buy beer, and it's really expensive to buy liquor, why can't you afford to pay a fucking ticket? You know, and similarly, this argument could be made with an attorney. You might be able to get people to volunteer to do it, although I always wince whenever I have to pay an attorney anything. It seems like such an outrageous deal. People should be taught legal schools and legal skills in primary school. Anyway, this. What about the city council? Generally, should you go to city council? Here's actually a statement that would mitigate against that. You could think about it. And I do go to city council less than I used to, but I still show up there occasionally. Why Pretend by Rico. I'm grateful to you, Robert, for being the burr under the saddle of democracy, he writes. There you are at every city council meeting and every downtown association meeting warms the cockles of my heart. I'm not really, but truth be told, whether 2 minutes or 30, no one knows this more than yourself. They couldn't give a rat's ass what you or I or those other people of the public have to say. You are either with the program of progress or you are not. If you are not, stand back or you're going to get run over. In my humble opinion, it isn't a matter of getting our 5 minutes of say or having transparent meetings or catching the ear of so-called representatives or even getting the right person's butt in a city council chair. When you see the city government working for those with money and power, when you see it locking the public out of decision-making, looking away as police abuse the citizenry, further marginalizing the marginalized, putting property rights over human rights, you are not seeing a broken and corrupt system. You are seeing a system working as it is intended. Look around. What does this local government or even the national government protect and prioritize? What does it ignore? Do you really think you have any use for city government and police? I mean, I know it is vaguely comforting at times to know that they are there, but what use do you have of them? Has the city government helped you in any tangible way whatsoever? Can you say the police kept you safe before a crime happened or helped you recover anything? Actually, the police did help me recover my car on 3 occasions. Full disclosure. On the other hand, how much have you paid in parking tickets downtown? That's a good point. Ever got a ticket from a city cop? Ever been harassed by a city cop? Have you ever had a run-in with the building department? Ever reported a crime and felt, talking to the cops, that you were under suspicion? Ever felt your opinion was listened to in city council? Do you feel like an ordinary citizen at the downtown association gives a shit what you think? Ever felt like local laws governing behavior applied more and more to you? You asked for my opinion, and here it is. The arbitrary rules that surround the puppet show called the city council are insignificant. Decisions are made long before they get to council, and we all should know this. Appealing to those who claim authority over us validates that authority. Fuck that. Trying to make change from within this system is a waste of your time and a futile diversion from making real change through direct action. What do you guys think of that?
Well, I guess I tend to be a more political person than that. So I founded an organization, got a bunch of people together, and I feel like we're trying to do something sort of legal from, you know, from
you see how
level.
Much good it's doing you, of course.
It's, you know, it's pretty disheartening, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what he's saying. It's, I mean, it's just, I can't just give up. It almost seems like giving up.
I don't think
up
he's saying give up. He's saying you've got to find other avenues to change than appealing to people who are already bought and sold or have their opinions really made up.
Well, that's what I mean. In talking to these people, I mean, I feel like they're at least listening a little bit sometimes. I'll be honest with you. We have actually corresponded with some of the council members. Whether I think they'll actually change their minds, that's a totally another thing. Some of these people have actually listened to us, as you said, full disclosure.
Well, don't be coaxed or coddled because somebody listens to you. That's their job, to go, That's what they're paid to do. I mean, they're politicians. So, but if you really want to make the change, you've got to go, I think, and again, into the community level, to the people who have the real problems. The people who buy the bullshit that the Santa Cruz Neighbors and the police department puts out. Who accept the false record that, you know, there's a whole bunch of runaway parties. And again, I'm speaking somewhat out of ignorance. I would have liked to have seen stats about how many runaway parties there were before 2005, how many there were after. And you can get those stats. Public Records Act request, you know, email me after or we can talk some more about how to do that. It's not very hard. You have the right to go in and examine those records, see them. They will probably charge you for printing them up, but, you know, it's 10, 15, 20 cents a page, 25 cents a page. If they're electronic, they're free, or they're only the copy of a disc, which is, you know, you can get the entire set of police general orders for 25 cents on a disc. It's amazing. It's a huge amount of information from the police department. That is to say, that supposedly all their policies. It's not. Of course, they've got all kinds of other stuff that's not on that. So I'm going to take a little breather here. But before I do, why don't I just take a little breather and you can hear you guys. I'm going to subject you guys to what the show is usually about, which is interviews with people on the streets, how they've had problems, folks who are poor getting hassled under the sleeping ban, things of that sort. I'm going to play a little of that, and then if anybody wants to call in on this subject, has advice, suggestions, their own experience with police and unruly assembly ordinances or other problems, or maybe you like what the police department is doing, maybe you appreciate the fact that that this law essentially is being kept and is going to be kept as is. Give a call, 427-3772.
Front of Borders at the one of the only remaining bench directly in front of Borders about 11:15 on Wednesday the 12th.
Stop harassing people with babies.
And we're talking with?
Oh. We're talking with Stephanie.
Stephanie, you're munching a salad while sitting on the sole bench remaining. You say your message is?
You need to tell the cops to stop harassing women with babies because they're not mothers. They don't know what's best for the child at the time. The child may be crying, but don't tell the mother what to do so the child will stop crying just because it makes you feel better inside.
And you speak with some authority because sitting right next to you is a baby carriage with a baby.
Yes.
And how old is that baby?
She is 5 months old.
And what is her name?
Her name is May.
And have you received some helpful or unhelpful advice about May recently?
Oh, yes, I have.
And what from who and when was that?
It was from some sort of fat-looking police officer that was walking down the street telling me that I needed to maybe feed my child because my child was incessantly crying.
Did he want a peek at your breasts? Was that the idea?
I have no idea.
Or did he want you to whip out a bottle?
I have no idea.
So he just came up to you and said, aha, hungry child. Did he offer to supply food?
No, he didn't. He was just being an ass because he had nothing better to do for the day. And there was no one else out here.
And when was this?
This was about 2 days ago.
And what was your reaction to this offer of or this advice?
I told him to please leave me alone because he had no business telling me what to do with my child.
And his response?
His response was, I was just offering to help.
Did you ask him then for $50, possibly for, you know, diapers, blankets, tampons?
I didn't think about it at the time.
Well, get it together, woman, okay?
Okay.
All right. Anything else from the street you want to report?
No.
I see you have the Hope Gang munching on a birthday cake that's been left on top of the change machine, I guess, for everybody on the street to munch, which is great.
We'll be talking more about that Hope Gang and the fine birthday cake on top of the change machine in front of Borders. But first, we have a call from San Jose from, well, why don't you sign in, caller?
Oh, this is Jim Vivian.
Hey, Jim, and I know you were on the air a couple of weeks ago. You had the ill fortune, I know you've worked with Food Not Bombs and other groups supporting the right of homeless people to use public spaces in San Jose, and you were, should we say, discovered by an officer trying to use a park space in the daytime, and the cop didn't like it, right?
Right. I haven't worked directly with Food Not Bombs, but I've worked with a lot of groups in San Jose.
Right, but you work with groups that, in essence, want to guarantee to the entire community, including poor people in the community, the right to use places like public parks and sidewalks and so forth.
Right. I've worked with groups like that. And in particular, I've worked with groups working for police accountability in
Cop Watch groups.
In groups like that, yeah.
I want to ask you more about that, but I know that you specifically, you went through a long rigmarole where they sent you through the courts on a what sounded like a bogus citation for being in the park after hours, but they gave you the ticket at 10:30 in the morning, right?
That's right.
And you went to sue the police for $1,500 for the costs of all the endlessly going to court, maybe pain and suffering, job loss. Tell us how that went.
Well, yesterday, this is a small claims court, and what the the whole case was, it started out as a criminal case because they gave me a citation for being in the park at 10:30 in the morning. And the criminal case, now this happened in San Jose, yes, but it really happens all over. And what they do in San Jose and most other places is they send these things to traffic court because it saves them money. And they think most of the people they give this kind of citation to are homeless. And what they want to do is they want to get a warrant on these people, so that it's their tickets to take them to jail whenever it's convenient for the authorities to take them to jail, like when the president's coming to town or whatever. So they put it through the traffic court system. But the trouble was, the traffic court immediately rejected the citation because it's not illegal to be in a park at 10:30 in the morning, which is what the cop wrote on the citation. One thing I should mention that I think is something people should always consider is, before I signed that ticket that day, I wrote in the space where it is assigned my name, it is now 10:35 a.m., and I wrote in response to something the cop kept saying that I am not wet, because the cop was trying to say I was soaking wet and that I had been there all night in the park, which I had not been. But the cop was trying to say I was soaking wet, so I wrote that right down on the ticket, I am not wet. And then I signed it, you know, below that. So all that was on there, and that's an important thing, you know, to write that immediately. They say you'll have your say later, but, you know, write it right then.
Interesting. So you then went to a criminal, a number of times to criminal court, and the police, did they finally show up and you won the case, or the case was dismissed out of court? What happened there?
Well, it was dismissed before it was dismissed, the cop then sent in a purported correction saying the time was actually 6:30 in the morning.
Rather,
so that was interesting because I was working until from midnight till 7 a.m. that day. So how could I be in the park at 6:30 in the morning? And then, you know, after that I went to the gas station. I had the receipt because I had to get gas on my way home from work. And, you know, so I could prove I was not the sunrise. When the park opened was 7:18 a.m. There's no way I could have gotten
what's the name
San
of the
Jose San Jose to West San Jose, 14.4 miles in 18 minutes at rush hour anyway.
What's the name of the San Jose cop who gave you the citation?
Eric Martin, badge number 3618.
Spell his last name?
M-A-R-T-I-N.
Eric Martin. Okay. And Officer Martin, if you're listening, hey, Colin, you can give your side of the story. I don't think he is, frankly, but you never can tell. So you then, you won the case where the judge ruled not guilty?
Well, what happened in the traffic court first, I was upset because I couldn't get a police report or anything when I got arraigned. So I asked to have a motion. A trial was also set, so I had to go through all the trial procedures. But, you know, this motion date was set, and it turned out the motion date was no good because it you know, with all the requirements on time frames, advance notice, and all that, there was no way I could do the motion for discovery on the date that I was given a motion hearing. So I ended up doing continuance motion, putting in the continuance motion, this was something people should consider too. Understand that I was refused, even though I don't have enough money to afford a lawyer. They said I couldn't have a lawyer because I would not be subjected to potential incarceration.
Yeah, they don't give you a lawyer unless it's an infraction, unless it's a misdemeanor or a felony. Infractions, you don't
have
a lawyer.
Well, it was a misdemeanor.
Oh, really?
They say it couldn't, it wouldn't. They say it will not include a jail sentence. Of course, the truth is, what they're trying to do is get it to include a jail sentence because they either give you a fine, a poor person can't afford to pay, and then you get a warrant for your arrest for not paying the fine, or they expect you just not, like you're saying, not to show up in court is what happens most of the time. You get a warrant directly from that. So you end up still having to go to jail over these things.
Well, wait a minute. Now, community service, isn't community service an option?
No, it's not an option in San Jose.
Interesting. San Jose. Boy, stay out of San Jose.
Hang
on. We actually have two people in the studio here, Jim. Who are? Go ahead, and Brian wants to say something.
Touch real quick on what he's talking about. Community service. When we were fined for loud and unruly gatherings, we inquired about community service in Santa Cruz as well, and we're not able to get that. And of note is that the city council talked about at length at their last Santa Cruz City Council meeting, in regards to one of my statements about not being able to get community service, that in fact the courts always offer it to those that could not pay. And we had a directly opposite experience that they denied.
So referee Kim Baskett, in your case, Brian, you asked for community service and were turned down?
Yeah, Kim Baskett offered a payment plan of $40 a month instead, but to pay off the $900 ticket, that was pretty nuts.
And did you say, I want community service?
Yeah, that was the first thing we asked for.
What did she say?
She said, that's not an option, but $40 a month payment plan is an option.
Interesting. Okay, Jim, go ahead. So you've got some people in Santa Cruz. Apparently the referees are doing the same thing here, although on infraction.
Sure, they want to collect the fine. You know, they want to either collect the fine or have that ticket to put you in jail with their convenience. So, you know, they want the money. They don't want you to do community service.
So you were in court. You finally got access to the police report, and...
Well, actually, I didn't get access to the police report until yesterday at Small Claims Court.
And when was the date of the
original...
Hold it. When was the date of the original offense?
Oh, it was December 20th, 2005.
December 20th, 2005, you showed up in...
Almost years ago.
And your criminal trial was when?
Well, because like I said, the whole thing got dragged out, and I was, you know, the first that they sent the cop, the ticket got rejected because it wasn't a crime to be in the park when it was open, and then the cop lied and said on this supposed correction signed under penalty of perjury that the time was really 6:30 a.m., then what happened is they told me when I went to do this motion thing that I served the DA, and the DA was handling it. And the DA said, no, we're not handling it. The city attorney's handling it. No, the city attorney said, no, the DA. No, and they just kept giving me the runaround. And it got dragged out. And finally, what happened is the judge got upset, read my continuance motion, and I was able to include in that continuance motion. This is something people should listen to because I think this applies to a lot of cases. If you do a continuance motion, it almost gives you a chance to put everything you want in there to explain why you need a continuance and why your case is more complicated than it might look on the outside, and thus you can explain everything. And that was really valuable to me because one of the real complications for me in this case is because my alibi was that I was at work at the time the correction said I was involved. you know, I work for clients that I'm supposed to keep confidential, so I had to give, like, blacked out information of the work records and all that stuff from that day, so...
Wait a minute. Hold it. You couldn't say where you worked, you mean?
Well, I didn't want to say anything about that because it's confidential.
Can I
get in trouble with my employer?
So I can't tell the kind of job you do.
Well, actually, I wanted to mention that later in context with something else because it turns up being pertinent. But,
yeah, I mean, I find it very interesting. I'd like to want to mention it briefly too.
Yeah.
I'll let you do that. But I want to know again the question: when did you eventually go to criminal trial and get the case?
So that all ended in September of 2006, almost a year after it started. So all that time, I had criminal charges pending against me, and all the complications from having criminal charges pending against you.
In the September trial. How long did it take, were you found not guilty fairly quickly? It was, of course, before a judge, not a jury, but...
Oh, what happened is the judge finally got upset, all the shenanigans, and he issued an order that the city attorney, who was supposed to be handling it, turned out, produced a document by a certain date, which is long after they, would have been required to be produced anyway. And the city attorney just came in that day, did not produce the document, and made a motion to dismiss the case in the interest of justice.
Who made an interest? The judge did, or the city attorney did?
The city attorney made that motion.
In the interest of justice, of course, is not as good as for insufficient evidence. Insufficient evidence means they can't prove shit. In the interest of justice means we'll be nice to you. But anyway, so in September 2006, a year after you were... sitting in the park during closing hours, which I think is ridiculous anyway, the park was open, you then sued Officer Martin for this and for what? What were you trying to get?
Well, I sued the City of San Jose and Officer Martin in small claims court.
Right. And so, this. When did you file the suit?
Well, what happens is, and the reason the city, I'm sure handled the case in the way they did, dismissal in the interest of justice rather than insufficient evidence, is because I had filed a claim against them. What happens is, you got to do that within 6 months. So by May, I guess, or whatever it was, June of 2007, I had to file that claim. So the city, of course, trying to reduce their chances of having to pay me anything.
City denied your claim.
They denied the claim. I think they have a full year to deny their claim. They used up almost the whole time. They did it, took about 11 and a half months.
So you came back to trial in small claims court yesterday, or the day before yesterday.
That's right.
Yesterday, actually, it was.
Yesterday it was.
And what happened? I mean, how did it go? Give us a blow-by-blow.
Well, what happened is they do discovery first. You go out in the hall and get the chance to look at the documents. So this is the first time I get to see anything that the police were saying. And what they were trying to say was that...
Which is completely illegal. You should have had access to the police report at your arraignment.
Of course I should have.
In the original criminal trial.
And they said, well, they don't do that in traffic court. Well, for one thing, they're doing mostly traffic tickets I should have had that, I made, like I said, I went through all this, formal requests and all that for discovery.
And that's the reason, by the way, that
never got it.
That's the reason I recommend to the audience that they always take things out of traffic court, disqualify referee Kim Baskett, and throw it up to municipal/superior court.
Well, I tried doing that. And the traffic court judge refused. It worked out okay there anyway.
Oh, really? Your peremptory challenge refused? That doesn't happen. Usually in Santa Cruz, In Santa Cruz, if you do this, you will be successful, because when they've tried to refuse us, we start doing things like lining up in large numbers, and oftentimes they're loath to follow the law, but if you make them embarrassed enough, they have to do it. Those are on the relatively rare occasions when the law is on your side, and often it isn't. Anyway, go ahead with your Jim with your case. We're talking with Jim Vivian of San Jose, who took the police to a small claims court yesterday in San Jose to try to recover some, $1,500?
Right. I actually you can sue for up to $7,500 in small claims. And I did the lower amount because I just, you know, I didn't think it was worth spending money. I needed to pay the rent to file for a higher amount. You got to pay more money.
Uh-huh.
So.
You have to pay more if you want to sue for more.
And I couldn't afford more. I tried filing, you know, fee waiver, and they rejected that, so I had to.
So you went into court, and first they took you out in the hallway and said, and you got to see for the first time the police report that they'd refused to show you over the many, many months in the past.
It's just a few notes he writes on the back of the ticket, but it's important what he was trying to say and what their arguments were was that, that the cop had actually seen me in the park at 5:30 in the morning while he was on his way to work, but he had some important business to do, so he didn't come back until 10:30 in the morning. Is what they were saying. Well, that's obviously I was at work.
So that was the cover story. That was the reason that.
Yeah, that was there.
So he saw you earlier.
Yeah, and then he wrote down on the back of the ticket that I was quite uncooperative.
Aha. Uh-huh. Bad boy.
Usually
this whole chatter in the hallway that they do where they exchange evidence is kind of a way of working it out short of the court, right, for a small claims court, and they're asking you to come to a settlement and bring it up to the judge, and I guess the police probably didn't want to settle, right?
So is this like on delay or something, because I'm hearing it at the beginning?
It is on delay. You can't listen to the radio. You have to listen to your telephone.
I better turn off my radio.
Yeah, definitely turn off your radio.
It's on inside my house.
Right, yes. My goodness. There we go. Turn that radio off. Off. Oh, for heaven's sake. Get that radio off. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay.
All right. So, in the hallway, you were trying to get a settlement, but you didn't get settled because the cops didn't want to settle, right?
Well, what happened is What happens is the city attorney's office, there's a cop who works in there who handles all these cases. Anytime a cop gets, sued, apparently this guy handles cases. So I had emailed him, asking him if he was interested in mediation. I told him, basically what I wanted in a settlement, and what I wanted was very reasonable. And here's where I can get maybe into, and he put this in the court papers and tried to introduce it in court. Commissioner was hearing it, said, well, she couldn't consider that anyway. And the court
Hold it. Didn't consider what?
What I asked for is a settlement, and what I thought was very reasonable.
Which was?
Let me explain. This is where I probably got to explain.
We're running low on time, man, so I'm trying to get you to cut it short here.
So what I asked for is that since the cops had arrested me several times in San Jose, each time the case either being refused to be prosecuted by the DA or being dropped long before, an actual trial took place, or, the cops stipulate that I was factually innocent in all this case, because what they've done is they've apparently reported me to the FBI, and I'm on an FBI criminal list, even though I have no conviction.
So how do you know you're reported to the FBI?
Oh, because when I applied for a job, I found that out.
That what
they mean,
for
they
criminal occupation of a park at the wrong time, eh? Part of a terrorist plot on your part.
They've arrested me several times. Each time the cops who arrested me knew I was factually innocent. The one that's probably gained the most attention is when I got arrested for watching the cops beat somebody up.
For watching the cops beat somebody?
Yeah, I was watching them legally.
You mean cop watching? You mean videoing them?
I was actually recording with my audio recorder, and they didn't know that.
The screams of the person being beaten up and the grunts of the police and the sound of the blows, eh?
Oh, yeah, it's all under. I think you
all right, well, we got to jump here because I got to roll in the next 2 or 3 minutes. So you can either call back with the... I actually don't mind long reports because I get a chance to go into some of the details, but unfortunately this is the short show, and also I've got two weary-looking guys here who probably aren't going to get a chance to say more than 2 minutes worth of concluding stuff. Do you want to call back? On Sunday, your job, why don't you tell us what your job is?
Well, see, I'm a security guard, and that's what I wanted to say. The reason I'm actually a security guard is I can get a job as a security guard because I have no criminal record, but I can't get a regular job because I'm on the FBI list, which is all very interesting. And that's why I became a security guard, is because I got directed to the job through, like, I was in this job training program and, you know, a mock interview, and then they wanted to do a real interview with me. I thought, well, I'll do it as a practice interview. And then I found out if you apply for this guard card, the security company doesn't do the background check on you. They got to do an official background check, and you have all these appeal rights to find out why you're denied the guard card. So you're supposed to get this thing in, like, 3 to 6 weeks. It took 2.5 months. They kept saying the Justice Department of the United States was holding it up. Obviously, we know the reason why.
Well, are you prepared? Hold it. Now, Jim, are you prepared to confess on the air that you are a terrorist?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not a terrorist.
Oh, come now. Let's be honest.
I'm not. But the whole point of this is that they do make, even your friends sometimes, once they get in an argument with you, they'll start, you must be on that list for some reason. You know, but the point is, it's very hard to find out.
I've always thought you were very suspicious
when you're on that list, you know?
So Jim, this is interesting stuff, but, I think what I'm going to do is, I actually got a long interview with John Teelking, who I guess it was one of the few former Santa Cruzans who actually came to your small claims court trial yesterday.
No.
But I really would like to hear it from you, but I don't think there's enough time for you to get into it, because you have you explore a lot of sort of side issues, which I think, as I said, is interesting, but doesn't really give us time on this particular show. Do you want to call back, or do you want to just do a quick and deadly, this happened, and this happened?
Okay, well, I guess I can do something quick right now.
Go for
basically,
it.
Basically, the court, I basically explained, but I'm saying, I gave him records to show that I had to miss work because of all this stuff I had to do, acting as my own attorney in traffic court and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, attorneys are not allowed in small claims court. You said last time
No, I'm talking about the criminal stuff in traffic court. I mean, I was forced to do that.
Well, I was asking you about, we can't really go back to the criminal thing stuff now because that's...
But that was part of my damage claim is what I'm saying, is all the expense and trouble.
Damage claim, you went through a lot of expense and trouble. But and you were arguing all this on your own behalf.
Right.
Oh, I see. And you didn't have an attorney in that court, but you weren't allowed an attorney, so you had to prepare and do all the research. That took up time and energy.
Oh, right.
Did you prove that you were factually innocent, by the way?
Well, I mean, I think...
Because factual innocence is different than not guilty. You have to actually... Not guilty is they don't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you're guilty. Factually innocent, you prove by a preponderance of the evidence that you are, in fact, innocent. And who among us is truly innocent?
Not it.
Well.
Anyway, so there you were in small claims court. The cop came with how many people?
Well, he came with this cop who looked like, there was somebody else in the park that day who came with the cop, didn't say a word to me, and mumbled a few words between him and the cop as they left. And it looked like the guy's partner there.
Mm-hmm.
They said was just there because he was his partner. And, of course, they never had this other guy testify. And the other interesting thing is the cop tried to say as little as possible. He had this guy from the city attorney's office speak on his behalf, I guess.
Wait a minute. He's not supposed to do that in small claims court. He's a bad cop if he does.
Well,
you're not allowed to have attorneys in small claims court.
Well, what they do is they have these people in the city attorney's office who are cops and are trained as attorneys, but they don't register with the bar, so they're not officially attorneys. So
you're not supposed to have somebody else speaking on your behalf. You're supposed to argue for yourself, aren't you?
Well, that's my whole point, and, is that the cop probably didn't want to speak on his own behalf because, that would have been his third time he is taking an oath to tell the truth, and what he was saying was obvious.
Jim, you know what we're going to have to do? We're going to have to postpone this.
But we got
to
know what was the result.
I don't think you know the result, right? You are still waiting the judge's determination.
What happened is they will send me the result in the mail in a couple weeks.
Okay. Yeah, that's, the check is in the mail.
Last time it took about 2 months to get it in the mail, but...
Well, I want more details of Jim. It's a fascinating case, frankly, although, it's kind of, we have to plod through it somewhat. I want to thank you for fighting this issue. Thank you for being a cop watcher. Thank you for doing it in a really difficult jurisdiction, San Jose, where they'll shoot you dead as soon as look at you. And thanks for calling in and talking about it. Is there anything you want to conclude with?
And that's about it. So I'm hoping to get a good result. You know, a lot of people said, well, the cop looked like a fool. You know, oh, another thing that I think is really important is, like I was saying, he was trying to, he said in court, well, the reason, even though it wasn't raining, and I had the weather page from the San Jose Mercury that said it had not rained within, you know, between 4 p.m. on December 19th and 4 p.m. on December 20th. This arrest is made on December 20th at 10:30 in the morning. So that rang, you know, what, 18, 19
and
hours.
He claimed your bag was wet.
He tried
right.
to say I was soaking wet, and he did say in court yesterday the reason he said that he knew I was there all night is because it had rained the night before. Well, it had not rained the night before.
He's got to check his weather report, you know, and you don't need a weatherman to know that the police are lying sometimes when their lips are moving, though not always. Let's not be unfair to those cops who are telling the truth. Jim Vivian, thank you for calling in. We'll talk again. Sorry to cut you off, but I got to roll. We got six minutes left, or probably less.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. You're tuned to Free Radio, last 6 minutes, and I'm on the still in the studio with the long-suffering Brian English and his sidekick, Jesse Wilson, I believe it is.
Oh, yeah. And Brian's my sidekick, but
oh, fine. Well, you can kick each other's sides all you want.
So, Robert Norris, I got some questions for you.
Go ahead.
You seem pretty educated in the subject.
Right.
If Brian and I were to become cop watchers ourselves and legally document police being unfair to college students and, you know, kind of harassing us at our own, you know, on our own properties, do you know the law as to when we're allowed to record them, how close we're allowed to stand?
Yes, you're allowed to record them at any time, video or audio, provided you're not interfering with the arrest.
Wow.
I mean, you can. That's just how it is.
We're told otherwise.
We tried. The cops.
They tried
to take the camera out of my hands.
Spinning a fairy story, eh? Was it Officer Aldridge who told you?
Yes, and there was a couple of others of them. But anyway,
they threatened
to take it.
No, he put out his camera, his hand, and said, "Give me the camera."
And your response is,
"I just put
back off, Mr. Lawman, or what authority do you want my camera? Please cite the authority you want my camera for."
He would have arrested me.
Well, then you would have had a nice false arrest lawsuit.
I can sue
a lot of witnesses. Oh, sure. He can't arrest you without probable cause. What crime are you guilty of?
But the problem is, they had six cops there. So they would have had six witnesses on their side of police, which are worth about 80 community members.
Yeah, but if we had it on video.
You get some other people videoing, and you say, you know, back off. I mean, video is very important. You could prove your case in court that it wasn't an unruly
assembly.
That's
true, with the video.
With a video. That's what you need. I mean,
let's be more specific. When we're holding the video camera, are we allowed to be on both public property and private property?
Correct. If it's your private property, or you have the permission of the property owner, or you don't have this objection.
And what if the cop approaches me and tries to take the camera out of my hands? Do I give it to him, or do I just...
Well, it depends. If he's attacking you with a gun in hand, you might do so under protest. Or one of the things one of my favorite individuals, Richard Quigley, used to do when the police would approach him illegally, is he would raise his hands and start saying, "Don't shoot! Don't shoot! Don't shoot!" And he would say so very loudly, so the entire neighborhood would hear. The police response was, of course, be rather somewhat embarrassed by that. Hmm. I've never used that approach.
You mean even if no one's pulling a gun?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Because they can do it at any time. They can pull a gun and shoot you. I mean, that can happen. You know, it happened to Happy John Dine in 1997 here in Santa Cruz. Officer Connor Carey shot him dead. That, we'll talk more, and you're invited to come back on Sunday or next Thursday if you'd like, or, you know, whenever we can work you in.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking with Jesse Wilson and his sidekick, Brian English. Again, you can check them out by going to
jessewilsonbusiness@gmail.com.
All right. Can somebody open the door?
It's also the Facebook group.
Also, I want to remind people that tomorrow at 10 o'clock in Department 2, Donna Dice will be facing the RV tickets, bogus RV tickets for being parked in an area which Officer Wallace didn't want her in. But in fact, she had a legal right to be in. And in fact, since then, the no RVs part of the signs have been painted over because of diligent work by her legal counselor, but not lawyer, John Golder. That's tomorrow, 10 o'clock in Department 2. It may be continued, though, so be advised of that. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up next, it's Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs, or let us say perhaps from the cream to the dregs. Well put. My show is from the cream, and then we're going to the dregs. Well put. Yes, I have to agree with that. Tune in again on Sunday. You can come back 9:30. I'll be here again for another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
Here comes the helicopter. Second time today. Everybody scatters and hopes it goes away. How many kids they've murdered, only God can say.
It may sound like dead air, but actually I wanted to spare you that If I Had a Rocket Launcher. That's such a violent song. Instead, we're going to have a little something softer, more melodic, a little something more 60s and 70s, and let's all get nostalgic and forget about the 2008.
Thank you. Welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. That, of course, the Cream from many, many years ago. The album, of course, Wheels of Fire. I'm Uncle Dennis. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1, www.freakradio.org. Be here till 11 o'clock playing music. At 9 o'clock, of course, we have the Earth First Update. And tonight at 9:30, we're going to have a special In the Tree interview with Owl, who's currently up a tree at the UCSC campus. He's going to tell us about how things are going up there and a little bit about why you'd want to sit in a tree. Stay tuned for that at 9:30 right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, our Up a Tree segment with Owl. So that's going to follow the Earth First Update, and we'll call that an Earth First special. So stay tuned for all of that. Of course, 10 o'clock, we're going to have our Spotlight Group of the Week. A whole hour of music by one group, different every week. Who knows what's going to be this week? That's one of the great things about free radio is you can do anything you want.
Thank you. quit shooting.